Netflix has a lot of weird dating shows, but perhaps they've never made one so weird, so baffling, so cringe-inducingly embarrassing for everyone involved as Love is Blind.
In this series, which they insist on calling an experiment, couples sit in separate cells that they call pods, where they can hear each other but not see each other. And once they've had a conversation or two, if they're getting along, they get engaged, and only then do they meet. Will any of them make it to the altar? Love is Blind is now in its second season, so we thought it would be a good time to revisit our conversation about the series. Our pal Sam Sanders joins us. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes, and in this encore episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we're talking about Love is Blind. So before we get too deeply into it, the basic idea of this show is that you start with some men and some women. They all sit in, if you think of them as little tiny prison cells, but with furniture and painted walls. They are separated by a wall that they can't see through, but they can hear through.
Right.
So it's basically like having a conversation with someone in two adjoining phone booths. And so they talk to each other. And then if they like each other enough to get engaged without ever having met or spoken to in a non-television-based situation, they move out of those pods and they go on vacation and live together and see if they really, really want to get married. You know, they all have to have a wedding and go up to the altar. And then when you're up there, you have to decide, are you going to say yes or are you going to say no, I dump you forever? Stephen, you're a viewer of trashy television.
Yes,
from
I am.
Way back, including some fairly trashy dating shows.
Enough that I can peg this show as a combination of The Bachelor, Married by America, and Mr. Personality, hosted by Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, boy. It's such
Deep
a long
cut.
History.
Deep cut.
What'd you think of this one?
You know, at the first couple episodes, I struggled a little bit. I found it very stressful. It's got some of that kind of falsely generated conflict. It's a dating show. I've kind of weaned myself off of The Bachelor, Bachelorette for kind of ethical reasons as much as
yeah.
anything.
Sure.
And getting back into a dating show took me a couple episodes, at which point I could not stop watching it.
Mm-hmm.
The instruction going in was, Stephen, I know you're very busy right now. You can just watch 3 or 4. I've watched all 10.
Oh, yeah.
And I just burned through them basically in one sitting. One of the things that makes this show so bingeable is that it's on Netflix, so there are, among other things, no commercials
mm-hmm.
and no reason to break into the show and say, coming mm-hmm. up, and then coming up, the scene you're about to see, and then you come out of commercials, here's a recap of what you saw before
this,
the commercial break.
Because yeah. you're beef with The Bachelor going back like 15
But he's right,
years.
Though.
They need
he's
to
right.
present on streaming services edited versions of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette where they cut that crap out, and then each episode will be like 26 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
So this doesn't have that, but it's centered on this ludicrous false choice between getting married or never seeing each other again, which is so dumb. Like, they're not allowed to subvert the show in any way. They're
yeah.
not allowed to say, like, F you, we're dating.
Mm-hmm.
They're sort of forced to do one or the other, and they all seem to buy into this experiment in a way that is very silly, but at the same time, it is a weirdly intoxicating show that I ultimately enormously enjoyed, even though it's very, very stupid.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. basically agree with that take. Sam, hit me. What'd you think?
Oh, man. So there are two big reasons I love this show. One, for what it says about Netflix, and two, for what it says about what we normally do and don't say about love. One, this really shows that, like, in spite of trying to be the place for prestige film, Netflix is actually really good at reality TV. You'll recall Cheer. You'll recall Tidying Up with Marie Kondo,
mm-hmm.
or Queer Eye, or Nailed It, or Next in Fashion, or that Glassblower reality show, followed by The Circle, and now this. They're making really good, addictive reality TV. And that's for several reasons, you know, some of which Stephen pointed out. They don't have to deal with commercial breaks. They can let these stories flow and feel organic. And then, in many ways, they are not overproducing this stuff. When I compare what's going on with Love is Blind to, like, The Bachelor, there seems to be less direct manipulation by the producers. there'll be these plot lines in The Bachelor where they'll have the couple go to a country music concert. But wait, turns out the country music singer is one of their exes.
Craziness ensues.
You see less of that with Love is Blind, and that makes it feel more earnest, even though it's still all fake. I know.
Right. Well, I mean, I think at the very least, they're better at hiding it. It doesn't feel as conspicuous, whatever manipulation there is. And, you know, there certainly is, like, we're all going to happen to meet up with my parents. And I mean, it does become kind of something that, you know, is staged in some of the same ways. But I do agree that they're better at making it feel like something that could happen in a real person's life.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. Like, this to me is evidence that whether they like it or not, Netflix is now better at reality TV than movies. And I'm fine with that. The second thing it says to me is the things we do or do not talk about publicly when it comes to courtship. I think this show is really brave in having these people who are strangers very early on in their quote-unquote relationships talk about race, talk about physical appearance, talk about money. One of the couples has to deal with the fact that one is black and one is white, and they discuss it the entire time, very openly and candidly and responsibly. Another couple, Barnett and what's her name?
Amber.
She is flat broke. In one episode, she says to him, my credit's crap. I don't always have a job. A few months ago, I was living out of my car. What you think about that? You would never see that on The Bachelor. You would never see that.
No, that's true.
And most couples don't talk about that until it's too late. So to see that discussed candidly on this show, I find it kind of refreshing.
Well, it's one of those things where it's both early and too late because they've already, on the one hand, they've only known each other for a couple weeks, but on the other hand, they're already engaged. So I agree that there's this funny conversation between, as Sam mentioned, Barnett and Amber, where it's not just that she's saying, like, I'm broke or whatever. And he asks her how many days a week she works. And she says, as many as I feel like it.
And then
she says, I work to live. I don't live to work, which is one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Red flag.
That could be, as you said, there's such a fine line between my queen and oh boy.
I feel the same way about folks that say that as folks who say, I don't do drama. It's like, oh, no, you do drama.
Well, right.
You actually do drama.
You sort of have to theoretically talk about those things, but you have none of the history that might make talking about those things in some ways both easier and harder, but you have to do it anyway.
You have to do it. Right.
The part that I found most jarring, to tell you the truth, was like the very first time someone in this show says, I love you.
Oh, my God.
I almost crawled out of my skin. It is so weird. The other thing I think is amazing about it is the people keep saying, this is crazy. And I keep wanting to say, yes, it
is.
It's
very crazy.
Where they keep
saying, you should
run. Are we nuts? Yes, you are.
And like that is what makes for me what's become the saddest storyline in this show. And this is the story of Mark and Jessica.
Yeah.
They have a great emotional connection, but Jessica doesn't think that Mark is physically her type. He's not tall enough, not Nordic enough, not blonde enough, not white enough. And that becomes clear very early on, and she never just says that.
He's also 10 years younger than she is. And
exactly. They
form a relationship where if it were a family pet, you would euthanize it out of mercy, like 20 hours before this show does. They get so much FaceTime, and just the entire time,
yes.
You're just, please run in opposite directions.
And that's what I don't get, because in so many other aspects of the show, the couples are extremely candid about money, about race. But in this one couple, they cannot be candid about physical attraction. Just be candid and say, I'm not sure I'm ever going to want to shtup you.
Like, you would think they would have, like, maybe an episode that was focused on them sitting down with a couple's counselor.
Mm-hmm.
Like every couple needs couples counseling, whether you are on a dumb reality show or not. Oh my gosh, the whole storyline between Giannina and Damien about her tendency to self-sabotage in silent brackets because she's not that into you.
Yeah.
Well, and also
she's trying to be a personality.
She's also one of those women who has picked up some kind of psychological therapy lingo.
Yes.
But she doesn't understand what any of it actually means. So
you're saying most people.
Yeah, well,
she's like all of us.
I think you're right, Sam. I think you're onto something when you say it's a combination of candor about certain things and mm-hmm. totally not dealing with other things.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about the physical attraction issue with Jessica and Mark, the funny thing to me was this show, which makes a big thing out of like you don't see each other first, mm-hmm. that turns out to mean for most people a very nebulous thing that they don't really talk about whether they have physical chemistry, and it's kind of hard to get at. The only couple where they really talk about what that means is when Jessica says he's too short, essentially.
Right.
You wouldn't even think necessarily about how short he is.
Yeah.
Except that he's in this show with a lot of super tall guys.
Sure. And Jessica's very tall herself.
They talk about that part, but I think she doesn't know how to separate out he's younger than me versus he's too short
right.
versus
yeah.
he has some ineffable thing versus I'm hung up on thinking about this other dude who
right.
is not interested in me.
Oh, man.
You start off with them all kind of trying to couple up. And if you don't find a partner who likes you and you like them,
you are raptured out of the show.
You got to get out.
Raptured.
Which could be for the best for these people to get raptured
sure.
out of it.
And it's like because these people only get to stay if they have a partner to go into the next phase with. It is hard not to read some of them, particularly Jessica, through the lens of like, I just want to make sure there's someone. Like, I just don't want to be the one when the music stops who doesn't have a chair in this game of musical chairs.
Okay. You mentioned music. I do not want to let this conversation end.
Oh, the music is very
bad. With talking about how excruciatingly bad the music.
Do we know the backstory on the music?
I think it is basically their budget was like $400 on wedding attire. This is not a lavishly produced show, and $2 for whatever open source music they had access to.
Which is what's crazy because like Netflix is the same company that spent God knows how much money mm-hmm. on Roma, on The Irishman.
Right. Oh my
and
God,
they
how
can't
much
get
did
a...
The Irishman cost?
Gotta make it up somewhere. All that de-aging technology is very expensive and it all came out of the Love is Blind music budget.
Also, maybe they pay Nick and Vanessa Lachey by the minute of screen time.
The worst host ever.
The total amount of screen time that Nick and Vanessa Lachey, I'm sorry, Vanessa Lachey and I'm obviously Nick Lachey.
He did say that when he walked out. I'm obviously Nick Lachey.
They are
the Viola Davis in doubt of reality TV show hosts. Remember her in doubt? It was 7 minutes.
Judy Dench in Shakespeare in Love.
Short but impactful performances.
Yes. Also, speaking of short but impactful, I got to say.
Mark.
Touche. No, one of the best scenes that I've ever seen in reality TV show history happened on this show. And I'm talking about the blow up. Knockdown, drag out fight between
Diamond
and Carlton. Have you ever seen such reality TV gold? Like, I haven't seen something that good since Teresa flipped the table on Housewives.
It's Teresa flipping the table.
I knew that was going to go badly,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
but you don't know how it's going to go badly. And it's another one where in that conversation between this woman, Diamond, and this man, Carlton, there's a thing he wants to tell her that he doesn't tell her until they're out of these little cells.
So he is bisexual. And he does not reveal this to his fiance until after she said yes to his proposal. And then when he does go about revealing it, it goes haywire.
Well, and it's a thing where she's framing it more as I'm upset that you kept it
yeah.
from me. And he has always had a sense that it was going to be an issue. And there's just, I don't know, Sam, what do you, I mean, I had a reaction of like, it's hard to know for sure how she would have reacted if he had told her like sooner.
As someone who has had to have those kind of conversations before,
mm-hmm.
you have to have it early on. You have
yeah.
to. And there's no excuse. And I don't care if you're on a video camera or not, or in a pod or not. Like, you owe your potential life partner that conversation.
You also owe her a tiny bit of understanding and space to process.
And to say it's hard. Yeah. Also, part of why I love the fight so much is because in the middle of this really emotional fight over whether or not he should have disclosed this and how she should feel about it. She starts, in the heat of the argument, quoting Beyonce lyrics to him.
Bye.
Kids, look, and watch my ass to the neck, boy.
No, watch your wig, because it keeps sliding.
You since day one. You think I am?
Your wig been
you
sliding since day
no
one.
You ain't average
peace
boy.
Out. Ooh. You're mad because I'm telling the truth.
It was amazing.
So immediately the audience is on her side.
Yeah.
Yes!
It is incredible.
And that feels very true to life. People think if I put off telling somebody something for long enough, then somehow magically it won't be as big of a deal later. And that's almost never true.
Yeah.
I will say when you get to the end, this show shares the general Netflix problem of a couple too many episodes.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for both of you about what this says about Netflix's strategy going forward.
I think it's a continuation of where they've been going, which is essentially if you, particularly in basic cable, if you exist in basic cable and you're making money off of anything, they want to come and try to replace you. They are trying to eat your lunch if you are anywhere in cable making money. And so, you know, their DNA is video store. They've always been like a video store. You could go in there and get a foreign film or a kid's movie or a, you know, whatever you wanted, because the point was it was an access point and not a brand like HBO or something like that, not a content brand.
And I'll say, for the record, I have watched just about every Netflix reality show of note. I have yet to watch The Irishman.
Well, we want to know what you think about Love is Blind. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show, and we'll see you all tomorrow.